Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you this morning to Christian Worldview, this 21st day of September. This is the first day of spring. Someone notified me yesterday. And we're glad you've joined us here on the show, 21st day of September 2005. Before we go on, let's take a look at what the weather's got in store for us.
Today in Greenville, Spartanburg, 70 degrees, downtown 70 degrees, Anderson 67, Clinton 69. Today, areas of fog this morning, partly cloudy with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 80s, east winds around 5 miles per hour, and chance of rain is 20%.
Okay, well that sounds like... Sounds like another day in South Carolina in about mid-September. Well, the big news, of course, in everybody's mind seems to be this Hurricane Rita. After going through Hurricane Katrina, now everybody's eyeing Hurricane Rita. It's now strengthened to a Category 3 hurricane and should be, by tonight, a Category 4 hurricane. So another one of these dangerous hurricanes out in the Gulf of Mexico. And this time it's expected to hit Galveston and possibly the same area in Louisiana, which was hit before. It looks like it'll spare Mississippi and Alabama this time, but at any rate, that's sort of the top story, and who knows what's gonna happen with it. Of course, everybody will be keeping tuned to that, trying to find out what's going on there. Well, we have a number of events in the upstate. I want to remind you folks up every week that have, you know, political ramifications to them, such as the League of the South or the Carolina Patriots and so forth. This week's event is the Greenville County Taxpayers Association that'll occur tomorrow night, the 22nd at 7 p.m. It's going to be a joint meeting with the Constitution Party. I want to encourage people to go out and attend that meeting if they can, just to get involved with things in the upstate. You don't have to be a constitutionalist to attend the Constitution Party meeting. You can be a libertarian and go there, a Republican, or have some other affiliation now, whatever that might be. So we'd encourage people to go out and check it out and be there 7 o'clock at the downtown Greenville Library for the Constitution Taxpayers Joint Meeting. No other regular important meetings in the rest of the week. Next week, remember, we have the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting on the 26th. That's at Sims Library at 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday, and the Libertarian Party roundup meeting Wednesday evening. That's the 28th next week. There are also a couple of other meetings going around in the upstate for the libertarians, one of which is the Libertarian Gathering out in Clemson. This is at the Mellow Mushroom, 189 Old Greenville Highway in Clemson. That's on September 27th, Tuesday. That's the following week. So I want to make sure we have that on our calendars. And in addition to that, you have another Libertarian Party business meeting in Spartanburg. That's Wednesday tonight, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Westside branch of the Spartanburg County Library. That's located at 525 Grove Road in Spartanburg. So, by all means, if you're in the Spartanburg area or out in Clemson, make note of both of those meeting times and places so you can possibly attend. Well, we actually are having some delays and expanding our transmission to the Spartanburg area. We thought it would be done over the weekend, and actually it may even be done today. So tomorrow morning there may be, it's a high possibility, or not tomorrow morning, Friday morning, there is a high possibility that Spartanburg will be broadcast on 87.9. Remember, in the upstate, folks, there are three frequencies carrying the Tyranny Response Network, at least theoretically in the abstract, 87.9 towards the Spartanburg area, and then 96.5 over by Powdersville, Piedmont, and Pelzer, those areas. And I suppose it may reach as far as Easley. And then here in Greenville proper, it's still 97.7, all on the FM dial. So by all means, folks, if you're traveling around the upstate, keep track of those different frequencies, because you can, as the signal fades in one area, as you drive to another, it will probably pick up with another one of the the frequencies. So wanted to make that point out, point that out to you folks, and glad you've joined us once again here for the Tyranny Response Network's famous Christian Worldview show with Dr. John Coben. Here's our first article for the day. It's Species and Ecosystems, Environmental False Alarms by Terry L. Anderson. Now, Terry L. Anderson is part of PERC. That's the Property and Environmental Research Center based in Bozeman, Montana. Terry Anderson and others there have done a great job over the years debunking the myths of these enviro-tyrants, the environmentalist people who go around and try to tell you that human beings can destroy the environment to such a point that it can thwart the plan of God in the world, actually destroy humankind off the face of the earth. And some people want that to happen. Some of the more radical environmentalists, they want to return back to nature and human beings become just another species that competes with lions and tigers and bears and oh my or whatever else. This is a guy, Terry Anderson, who's done a great job along with others there at the PERC, Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana, for the last few decades. Species and Ecosystems, Environmental False Alarms is what he writes. In his new book, Collapse, Jared Diamond begins with a chapter in my home state of Montana. Although painting a romantic picture of the big sky country, he decries environmental tragedies, including toxic mineral waste, forest fire, soil exhaustion, water shortages, and invasive species. Diamond blames these environmental perils on miners, loggers, and farmers who behaved as they did because the government required almost nothing of them, because they were business people maximizing profits. Reading his gloom and doom chapter, one wonders why Ted Turner, Charles Schwab, and friends are buying land in Montana. The reason is that Montana's environment would not be as trash as alarmist alarmist Diamond would have us believe. Here are the facts about Montana. You can drink from almost any stream without concern for toxic waste, though you might worry about Giardia. That's it's a parasite, of course, from burgeoning elk herds. You can view millions of acres of spectacular forests, many on private lands. Farms remain productive, and lands mined at the turn of the century are being reclaimed. In short, Montana's environment is getting better, not worse. The same holds generally true of development in the developed world. From 1970 to 2000, for example, concentrations of carbon monoxide fell by 75% in the United States and 95% in the United Kingdom. From 1975 to 2000, nitrogen oxides declined by 35% in the United States and by 40% in the United Kingdom. Furthermore, we in the United States are actually sequestering as much carbon through improved agricultural techniques, healthy forests, and sealed landfills as we are adding to the atmosphere's greenhouse gases. Why is this so? First, as incomes rise, people demand and can afford a healthy environment. And that's the primary reason we clean environments up in the market, is because as people get enough money from their production and have some excess, instead of choosing to buy with that additional $1,000 there in that year another television set, they say, look, I think I'd rather have a little bit cleaner environment. So they buy air filters and so forth to start cleaning up locally in their own households and their cars. And then it can expand to other things as people begin to put more money and thought into encouraging others around them to behave in a way which cleans up the environment. So cleanliness is a function of greater wealth, and that comes through greater production. This is how the market works and how things get cleaner through market systems. When you have government systems cleaning things, all you get is a permanent level of disaster and catastrophe and dirtiness. If you'd like to talk about more of that theory, we'd be happy to discuss it here. Just give us a call at 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we just like to remind you about our friends at the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner is the conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, why not pick up a copy of the Times Examiner? In fact, get a copy sent to you every week. It comes right by first-class mail, and you'll be able to read all sorts of true conservative constitutionalist and pro-life libertarian columnists. Good stuff. And the Times Examiner supports homeschooling and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. A full year subscription is only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. Call 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576 to start your subscription. You can also put an ad in the Times Examiner for a relatively low rate and help your business and help the paper. You can email David directly or call David directly at 864-859-6817, 864-859-6817. Ask for David and put your ad in the Times Examiner. So, any rate, here's another story on deficit spending for Katrina by Ron Paul. Ron Paul, our favorite congressman on the Hill. Some economists estimate that rebuilding New Orleans and other areas impacted by Hurricane Katrina will cost taxpayers at least $200 billion. Which may be a conservative figure, considering it could take decades to fully restore the city. The problem is that our Treasury Department does not have an extra $200 billion on hand. This means the money will either be printed or borrowed, both of which bode ill for the American economy. Several conservatives in Congress, however, are cautioning against throwing more and more taxpayer money at the problem with no accountability, while all want to help the victims of Katrina. We must remember that no one is better off if we create record deficits that hobble our children and grandchildren for generations. So not only that, it's going far beyond children and grandchildren now with an $8 trillion deficit, folks. I'm interjecting here. I believe the deficit grows every day by $1.4 billion. That's right. A new billionaire, in a sense, is created every day in the United States, as the debt grows and the interest is required. You know, it's such a farce. The fact that they even claim that this stuff can ever be paid off, it will at some point be repudiated. I don't know how, but it cannot possibly be paid off and growing at a rate of $1 billion per year or per day. Anyway, some economists estimate that already read that part. Let's just skip down. The tragic scenes of abject poverty and distress in New Orleans prompted two emotional reactions. One side claims Katrina proves there's not enough government welfare and government spending in general. The other side claims we need to pump billions of new dollars into FEMA, the very agency that performed so badly, while giving it extraordinary new police powers. Both sides simply assume hundreds of billions of dollars in new government spending are needed, but history shows us that compassionate deficit spending hurts poor people the most by devaluating the dollar. When the Treasury prints new money, the ruling class benefits because they can cash in on inflated assets like stocks and real estate early in the cycle of printing and spending. The poor, by contrast, are totally dependent on the immediate buying power of their meager resources. Katrina has also exposed the failed welfare policies over the past 60 years, and in New Orleans, hundreds of thousands of impoverished citizens lacked any resources to safeguard their families and their property from the storm. Virtually everyone who stayed behind was poor. It's time to recognize that government assistance over several generations did not eradicate poverty in New Orleans, but rather created a deadly form of dependency on government. And he's absolutely right. The answer, when you have a problem in society, whether it be educating children or protecting people from natural disasters, is not to use the state. States are not well equipped to handle these kinds of problems. And the old idea that, well, if we just had more money, is false. The public school has been saying that for decades. And folks, now the public school cannot educate as well, if that were truly the objective, which is not, but they cannot educate as well with $11,000 or $10,500 per on average per student, as well as a Christian college can, or a Christian school can, for $2,000 per student per year, and certainly not as well as a homeschooled student that might require $250 per year per student. The answer is not more money. More money has not made it better. In fact, in the case of the public school, it's gotten worse. And the idea that we should go into debt and to have a greater deficit this year and national debt growing, or just print money and inflate it through the Federal Reserve manipulations, is not going to help the situation for resolving natural disasters. We'll simply get more debt, more government, and fewer rights. What a great deal. Why in the world would we want to do that, folks? It's not a solution. It's not workable. The state is not the answer to our problems. The state is the problem. That's citing Ronald Reagan's famous women's quote there, I know, but he's quite correct. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Hope you have a question or comment for the show today, and if you do, give us a call at 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Here's an article by Bishop Grewell, Grewell, on conservation efforts. Who do you want managing our national parks? That's right, conservation efforts. Who do you want managing our national parks? He's a research fellow with the Property Environmental Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. That's PERC. We read an article from them earlier today from Terry L. Anderson. Great choice. Great article. He said the U.S. Forest Service is ending recreation fees under the Fee Demonstration Program on one quarter of its sites in Washington and Oregon. Recently, the Oregon legislature unanimously voted in support of a resolution calling for Congress to repeal recreation fees entirely. Both Montana and Colorado state legislatures passed resolutions in recent months calling for Congress to scrap fee demonstration as well. The hoopla comes in the wake of the program's extension by Ohio Congressman Ralph Regula in a budget rider last fall. While a rider is rarely an appropriate way to continue any legislation, much less fee demonstration, the program deserved to continue. It has been an unqualified success in our national parks. Breaking down the misguided analogies of the program's opponents provides the clearest evidence where the program has gone right. And skipping down, he says, it is the ownership aspect of private housing that ensures it remains in better shape than public housing. Similar to public housing, the nation's federal land suffered from graffiti and littering problems as use has increased. In 1999, the National Parks Conservation Association named the Chaco Cultural National Historic Park in New Mexico as one of the 10 most threatened parks in the country. Wow. Skipping down a little further, he says, the politicians who direct tax dollars prefer to see their funds allocated to glamorous projects where they can cut a ribbon and get media exposure that will help in election times. Fixing potholes and sewage systems doesn't stack up to building multi-million-dollar visitor centers or million-dollar self-composting outhouses. That's really worthwhile. The fee demonstration fixed that problem by keeping the funds in the hands of the on-the-ground personnel and letting them spend the funds where the funds were needed. He's pointing out something that's very important. Folks, the reason why we have problems of littering and trash primarily in any society, there's two reasons. One is criminal activity, much as you have with people who cross the border right now from Mexico and they bring trash with them and just dump it on someone else's property. They're trespassers and they're, you know, engaging in a criminal activity. Now, I have to say, they don't realize they are in the sense that they're used to living that way. And Mexico, the poor people that come over, that doesn't excuse it or make it any less a crime. It just makes it, gives us a different understanding when we realize that that's the way they live. On the other hand, we always see that private property rights preclude, when there is no crime involved, trashing a place. That's right. If you own your property, if you actually have an interest in the property, you're going to take care of it. You don't see too many people just running down the road in subdivisions and suburban areas and heaving trash out the window. But you do see them willing to do so on the interstate highway system, which is publicly owned and no one actually owns the property. There's less incentive to care for something when it is publicly owned. And litter problems, pollution problems in general are exacerbated by government ownership rather than private ownership. So this is a great, great comment here that Bishop Grewell has come up with, and I agree entirely. This is our main problem with environmental issues. It's not that there isn't enough government. It's we have too much state ownership of private property, and trying to manage the environment just doesn't work. They make it worse, not better. Or they make it permanent level of badness, which never goes away. Here's the Cakewalk Tour. This is an article by Paul Craig Roberts. The Cakewalk Tour looks interesting. It's sent up by the research staff just recently. The Cakewalk Tour is now 2.5 years old. U.S. casualties, dead and wounded number 20,000. As 20,000 is the number of Iraqi insurgents, according to U.S. military commanders, each insurgent is responsible for one U.S. casualty. U.S. troops in Iraq number about 150,000. Obviously, U.S. troops have not inflicted 150,000 casualties on the Iraqi insurgents. U.S. troops have perhaps inflicted 150,000 casualties on the Iraqi civilian population, primarily women and children, who are the collateral damage of the righteous and virtuous U.S. invasion that is spreading civilian deaths all over Mesopotamia in the name of democracy. It's really the name of communism, as we've read the Bill of Rights and the Constitution that's coming up from these Iraqi negotiations there. It's not anything but socialism and welfareism, interventionism. He says, to avoid the analogy with Vietnam, until last week the U.S. military studiously avoided body counts. If 2,000 insurgents had been killed, each death required 900,000 rounds of ammunition. The combination, wow, that's an extraordinary amount of ammunition. If we've actually shot that many rounds, we multiplied 2,000 times 900,000. What have we got? 1.8 billion rounds of ammunition? Good grief. The combination of U.S. government-owned ammo plants and those of commercial producers together cannot make bullets as fast as U.S. troops are firing them. The Bush administration has had to turn to foreign producers such as Israeli military industries. Think about that. Hollowed out U.S. industry cannot produce enough ammunition to defeat a 20,000-man insurgency. With its judgment lost to frustration, the U.S. military has 40,000 Iraqis in detention, twice the number of estimated insurgents. Obviously, the U.S., not knowing who or where the insurgents are, is just striking blindly, creating a larger insurgency. Does this sound like Syria being set up for invasion, too? What about Lebanon and Palestine and all the problems there? According to news reports at Ted Forstman's annual meeting of movers and shakers last week, and U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, predicted that U.S. troops will soon enter into Syria. Simultaneously, the Bush administration is desperately trying to orchestrate a case that it can use to attack Iran. Stalemated in Iraq, the White House moron intends to attack two more countries. My. And, well, Paul Craig Roberts, most of the time he gets it right, and today he's got it right. It is an awful thing. If these statistics are true, this is appalling. Appalling. And what is this? The number of U.S. casualties, dead or wounded? 20,000 for this crazy war of imperialistic spread in Iraq. Well, it's crazy only from our perspective. We don't think that George Bush has an ulterior motive and the other globalists of global control, new world order, and paying off their friends. Apparently, he has friends in the ammunition business. Probably would have been a good idea to buy some stock in people who have government contracts to produce ammunition, it seems, because they've have shot off 1.8 billion rounds, according to that article. Incredible. My. Well, here is there's a life chain event going on in Colombia. Just wanted to let folks know. Life Chain 2005. South Carolina, October 2nd, 2005. Preliminary note from Columbia Christians for Life director Steve LaFermi. This life chain event in South Carolina is an opportunity for pro-life people to publicly demonstrate their support for the sanctity of life. However, in fidelity to Christ, by publicizing this event, I must also make clear that this is not an event that will necessarily attend by only born-again Christians or evangelicals. And so he just wants everybody to be aware of that. The place is going to be the national, let's see, oh, in front of the State House, on State House grounds, on Sunday, 2:30 to 3:30 p.m., October 2nd. So if you can attend the National Life Chain, be sure to head down there and check it out at Columbia and be part of that great event. Columbia, 2:30, State House grounds, on Sunday, October 2nd. And you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
As long as the state, the agency of coercion, stands over society offering to dispense economic privilege to those who pay it homage, conferring an advantage on some men at the expense of other men, the misuse of political power should be the first line of attack for the moralist. It is inevitable that political privilege will be used in this way if it is available and begging to be used. No people has ever resisted it who have been led into this temptation. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in the Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 84.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This 21st day of September 2005, this first day of spring, and what's the weather going to be like our first day of spring?
Well, right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, 70 degrees. Downtown, also 70. Anderson, 69. Clemson, also 69. Today, areas of fog this morning, partly cloudy with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 80s. East winds around 5 miles per hour, and chance of rain is 20%.
Okay, very good. Well, yesterday we had a pretty good discussion of something that went on in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Had a couple of callers talking about it. I think it was Quess and Chuck talking about what was going on in this whole situation with David. And one of our research staff emailed me a part of the chapter that he wanted to highlight, and that says in 1 Samuel 25:33, David's response to Abigail as Abigail's intercessory actions. And blessed be your discernment, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from bloodshed and from avenging myself by my own hand. Well, the question in 1 Samuel 25 is rather interesting. Well, as Quest quite well pointed out yesterday, we know that that Israel rejected God and wanted a king. And by wanting a king, they selected man's way rather than God's way. And God required of them, said the king would require of them, taxes and conscription. Didn't say, of course, that he had representative government or there'd be limitations on taxes or that taxes wouldn't be fair. In fact, it could well be, as the discussion went on, that it became clear to me that taxes could be very arbitrary and capricious. And this is what happened, I think, with Nabal and Abigail. Of course, Nabal means fool, and he was a fool. Later on, died. David eventually married Abigail, this wise woman. David, in a sense, looks like a tyrant to us, did what he wanted. He demanded some special taxation from Nabal, and Nabal didn't give it to him. And eventually the guy died and almost would have been killed by David, as the verse says here. This is interesting stuff. Of course, this is under the theocracy. It's under a time in which God gave full reign to a monarch. So it's not the same as what we have here in America, but it does show the way things were back then, and it is interesting to see. God nowhere says that David was in sin for this action, like he was with his action with Bathsheba. So it's not clear that there was a sinful act at all to demand this tax out of Nabal. Of course, there's some debate over the fact that David had several wives, like Michal and Abigail, and Bathsheba, obviously. God never condemns David for being a polygamist. He does condemn him for being an adulterer and a murderer, but this isn't called murder here in 1 Samuel 25, and his actions with the other women, or living with these other women in a state of marriage, is not condemned. So in the Old Testament, apparently, and as I said, it's debatable, but apparently polygamy was not looked upon as a sin, so long as you were married to all these folks. In the New Testament, things have changed, because it's very clear in 1 Timothy chapter 3, Titus chapter 1, that an elder, the males who are leaders in the church, may only have one wife. And if they're an example for the rest of the flock, then obviously we should only have one wife. And Christ also made it very clear that in the beginning, God made it so there would be one man and one woman. But it's interesting that it does not condemn polygamy in the Old Testament as a sin. Never once is it mentioned as a sin. So I know that's I'm probably overstepping my bounds, getting out of my normal public policy and economics routine to make that comment, but it just strikes me as interesting, especially in this discussion of David's actions as a government leader, that apparently there were a number of things not condemned that we might condemn as sinful today that were not sinful then, and one of them might be polygamy, another might be arbitrary and capricious setting of a direct tax imposed on an individual by the king under the theocracy. Now, someone might argue, no, polygamy was sinful, and doing what David did here was sinful by trying to extract this tax from Nabal by means, it was a food payment. It was just actually trying to feed his army directly with some of the foodstuffs of Nabal's land. But at any rate, this is an interesting debate. If you have a comment, I'd like to weigh in and talk about either of these issues, we'd love to hear from you on Christian Worldview, trying to grow in our own understanding here of the Scriptures, and that's a great thing to do on any given morning. You can reach us at 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have a sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they're regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Malden Road between the old stadium and Lawrence Road. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us with the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. And we have going to go to a quick break now. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And during the break, we got a call from Greg, who's on the line now. And Greg has an interesting insight into another way of looking at the whole Nabal Abigail incident. You know, we've been talking about it as if David had the right to make a just tax, but I think Greg's going to make and impose that on other folks. But he's got a good point here about where David stood. Even though he was anointed as king, he wasn't actually serving as the king at the time. So go ahead, Greg. Let's hear what you've got in mind on this. Sounds interesting.
All right. Well, at the time, he was wandering around. He was not the king. He was anointed, but he had not taken that actual position yet. He was, I use the analogy in our conversation, like the Viet Cong, just say the Mafia. They do something... They're guarding the sheep, guarding your house, guarding your industry against predators and marauders by day and by night doing something else. When it was all over and time to leave, then David said that, well, I should get some kind of payment for this. And Nabal, being the fool that he was, would not pay him. So this got David angry. And David was going to come back and kill Nabal. And here you have, that was the reason I sent that verse in there, where David confesses that Abigail went out and met David. She took the food and she fed David's men, like David was expecting. And she interceded in behalf of her husband. And then David confesses, "You have kept me from sinning this great sin of murder just because I was angry at a man who would not pay me for my wages."
So here you're saying that David is effectively showing again his hot wrath and his willingness to kill people, and because he didn't get what he thought he deserved from Nabal and his guerrilla activity effectively guarding his flocks and so forth, he was going to go and slaughter this guy.
It may not be guerrilla activity, but I'm just saying similar to what the Viet Cong would come and collect taxes for protecting the village, or, you know, the Mafia does the same thing, keep your house from burning down if you pay me, or your business. But he was just doing it, I guess, because this is where he ended up, and he had an army, so he would protect Nabal's possessions. And Nabal showed his ingratitude, and this got David ticked off, and he was going to go kill him.
Well, that's a fascinating way to look at it. In fact, that sounds pretty compelling, too. I can see how you can make the case either way, but this sort of sways me more as I think about it. My original response to Chuck yesterday was that he was sinning. But Chuck brought up, well, you know, he was the king, truly, even though he wasn't acting at it, because Saul was usurping his authority, basically. But he was the king, and he had a right to tax, and his quest said, you know, yesterday he had the right to tax with caprice and an arbitrary nature, apparently, according to 1 Samuel chapter 8. That's what was to be expected. And so this is just the kingly action, taxing his servant. But looking at the other way, you might well conclude that David was just doing something wicked here and not doing what God wanted him to do, but was actually going to take somebody's life. And would be, and he's confessing later on that he would have shed innocent blood. So there are two different ways I suppose you can look at it. This actually sounds pretty compelling to me. I'd be interested to hear what Chuck or Quest have to say to Greg's interpretation here, because it sounds pretty reasonable to me that this is just a blow it of David. And, you know, let me interject here. Maybe you have a comment, too, about this, Greg. I've also contend that Joseph was sinning when he was in Egypt, doing the welfare state thing, finding new ways that he could capture something else from the citizens or the people who lived in Egypt. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. This is all under the hand of God. You know, when God claims his rights or shows his power toward the welfare of a citizenry, are we really talking about something that becomes sin? Obviously, he took the possessions of the people of the land and put it into the hands of royalty, and he didn't do anything with the. It says it's something interesting to me about that perhaps somebody could think about. He didn't take the possessions of the priesthood of Egypt.
Yeah, that's
true. In other words, you have a divine. In other words, God is taking away all the rights and property of the citizenry, the general, the hoi polloi, as the word is. Is put, and it was for their protection. In other words, you have a holy welfare state, and that God did it by the hand of this man. To me, that would be that could be a picture of Christ, and that his lordship would be protecting the people. But when you see man doing something like that, you have the opposite situation. They become into bondage, and they become more and more oppressed.
Yeah, I don't see God working through this man in that particular way. The passage seems to indicate that the people indeed did get fed, but they also gave up their livelihoods, they gave up their properties, they became slaves, essentially, of Pharaoh through one event after another. And Joseph just did whatever he could to pad the pockets of the politician, but the king that he served. It didn't seem like the people's best interests were in mind, or that he was doing this to glorify the Lord in his specific activities. He was simply plundering people in the name of the state, or using the authority of the state, and it's a very harmful thing. Now, many Christians look at it as being God's man for the hour and providing welfare to people, but I don't see anywhere else in the Scripture that God condones the use of the state to in any way provide temporary welfare. It wasn't a welfare state in Egypt, but it was temporary welfare, and I don't see anywhere in Scripture that condones such activity.
Well, the people did cry out, say, "You have saved us," and it seemed like a happy ending to this story, so to speak.
Well, I don't know, though. Was it, though? They lost all their private property rights. They became enslaved. I mean, yeah, they stayed alive. That's a happy ending, but that the government of Egypt got far more powerful and far more dictatorial and evil, as we see what happened with what they did to the Israelites in Goshen eventually. So I still have not seen any reason to believe that this was a good event, even though many folks, I'm not suggesting you, but many folks in the Divine Right camp, for instance, would love to make this a great example of how, you know, the state can intervene into the world and provide for the needs of people under God's hand. We believe God controls all things, but it doesn't mean that all things that are done in life are done well or righteously.
Oh, there's something in the back of my head that I can't quite get it out here right now, but maybe when we get the show, we can repartee this a little bit and see if we can come up to any wise conclusions on this.
It's a great idea. It's a good topic for discussion, something to help us all think a little bit better, isn't it? Well, Greg, we're coming up to a break here, so either you can hold on or I'm going to let you go. And we appreciate the call and these great thoughts on both Joseph as well as Nabal and Abigail. And if anyone else would like to call in and discuss these issues, we'd be happy to hear from you this morning at 864-244-8177. And you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Exciting talk today, Lord, as the Lord is helping us think about the Word of God and the Old Testament, specifically the actions of Joseph as well as David, who was not quite anointed king yet. And we hope other people will be able to chime in with some other thoughts on this. Interesting stuff. I want to remind folks that the Greenville Conference of the Christian Exodus will be meeting on October 15th at the Hilton Hotel in Greenville. It's $40 to register for this event. And I know Corey Brunel and the others at Christian Exodus are looking forward to having a great showing of people. You can call and register at 877-727-3578. That's 877-727-3578. They also put an ad out today saying that TravelZoo is offering a number of fares to Greenville, especially from places like Seattle and Washington, D.C., for $99 round trip. So for whatever reason, right now you can get to Greenville from those cities very inexpensively, if that's a concern for others who are listening abroad or thinking about coming from other states. Remember, this meeting will entail various speakers, including yours truly, as well as Michael Chapman, Mr. Arthur Bringelson, and Corey Brunel. Should be an exciting time of workshops and discussion about what Christian Exodus is all about and where Christian Exodus plans to go in the following months as it continues to expand here in Greenville. Again, the phone number to call to attend the event is 877-727-3578. Remember, the fee to attend is going to be $40, and that's going to include lunch as well as all the speaking events. Okay, that's our Christian Exodus announcement for the morning, done and in the bank. Also want to remind folks to go to tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net. These are important places to go every day. Why? Because there you can find out all sorts of interesting things that are going on in the upstate of South Carolina. And that's under the events tab, as well as to hear some great audio files, some teaching on the theology of public policy. It's under the audio link on the tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net website. Under the related media link, there's also the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition. If you scroll down to the bottom, you'll be able to click on that link to save your private property. go ahead and sign that petition. It takes about 30 seconds to do so. We hope that you will do so and encourage and be a part, at least in building liberty, at least a little bit here in the upstate. Remember, our frequencies have changed, and we're going to be having 97.7 here in Greenville. That has not changed, but 96.5 if you're over in the Pelzer Piedmont area. Also check out 87.9 beginning on Friday or sometime next week, coming out of Spartanburg and elsewhere in the upstate. We'll also be using that frequency, just so you're aware of it. There have been some changes to the frequencies in the upstate of South Carolina that you should know about as the signal continues to improve and expand by our great volunteer staff and volunteer efforts. We are also looking for new volunteers, or more volunteers, I should say, to help with signal transmission, technical things, and as well as a substitute producer for the Christian Worldview show. If you're able to help, please give us a call at 864-244-8177 or simply go to the Contacts tab. That Contacts tab on the tyrannyresponse.com website, and you'll be able to scroll down there and see a number of names. Just click on any one of the names you see there and send an email to someone, and they'll put you in touch with the proper people to get you set up and squared away. We really appreciate even people who can put in just an hour a month or 2 hours a month into working for the Tyranny Response Network. It's a great effort, and it's worth doing if we're willing to strive and try to maintain liberty in the land. Well, I've had a number of good articles come in from Christian libertarians. Brian Morton does a great job just scouring the net each day and finding good articles to read. This one came out on September 14th, and by Samuel Gregg, and he's a doctor of philosophy, and he wrote on low marks for poor memory. And the way low marks is spelled is M-A-R-X, as in Karl Marx. This is an Acton commentary from the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty. It's more or less a Catholic institute that likes libertarian perspectives on things. Karl Marx is the greatest philosopher of all time, or at least this is what many BBC radio listeners suggested recently when they asked to nominate such a person. To the surprise of some, Marx topped the poll, beating by wide margins thinkers ranging from Aristotle to Kant. Marx wrote many things, including admiring words about capitalism, which he regarded as a definite advance on previous economic arrangements. The BBC result, however, underlines a strange blindness about Marx persisting within Western societies. In one sense, this is nothing new. In the 1930s, intrepid Westerners traveled to the USSR and returned saying that they had seen the future. Somehow they managed not to see the purges, the collectivization, and the gulags that resulted from the imprisonment and deaths of millions. Communism, it is often said, was a godless system. It is not quite right. Communism was godless insofar as it was based on an atheistic vision of man, yet communism did have its gods. It had its deities to whom anything and anyone could be sacrificed. One response is to claim that Marx's philosophy was distorted by Lenin or Stalin. Marx himself, one often hears, was a humanist who wished to liberate people from their chains. Other apologists insist that one can distinguish between the young Marx and the old Marx, the youthful philosopher being more humanistic than the grayer, more callous political revolutionary. Even cursory attention to Marx's writing quickly reveals the hollowness of such defenses. A consistent anti-human vision features throughout Marx's thought. For Marx, man is a being whose origins are irrelevant, whose future is extinction, and whose present is beyond his control. Even people living in Marx's communist society have no possibility of a meaningful existence. Marx once described communist society as one which would be possible to do one thing today and another thing tomorrow, to hunt in the morning, to fish in the afternoon, breed cattle in the evening, and criticize after dinner, just as I please. This sounds idyllic, until one realizes that from a Marxism's perspective, none of these activities can have any value for humans. For true materialists, there can be no qualitative difference between reading and fishing, working or sleeping, living or dying. Everything has the same value and therefore no value. In this world, there is no difference between Mother Teresa's work and that of a concentration camp guard. They share equally in a general irrelevance of everything, everywhere, and everyone. This is a great article to point out some of the differences between the Christian worldview and the humanist worldview. It is a hopeless existence if you do not have Jesus Christ in your life. There is no point to live, really, if your greatest hope is to go home and enjoy a hot meal, as one humanist once told me every evening. we have a greater hope than that in this world. Our hope is in Christ, and we're thankful for that. And our Christian worldview gives us a very different perspective on things, and it's what drives us to different conclusions. We appreciate Dr. Samuel Gregg coming up with this article this morning, and he concludes simply by saying, "Much violence has been done in the name of philosophies and religion, including Christianity. The difference is that Christianity contains moral criteria according to which we can judge and condemn such activity on the part of Christians. Marxism never had and could never have such standards. For a Marxist philosophy, there is no place for love of God and love of neighbor. Perhaps not that above all is what makes Marx so unworthy of contemporary admiration." And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
As long as the state, the agency of coercion, stands over society offering to dispense economic privilege to those who pay it homage, conferring an advantage on some men at the expense of other men, the misuse of political power should be the first line of attack for the moralist. It is inevitable that political privilege will be used in this way if it is available and begging to be used. No people has ever resisted it who have been led into this temptation. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 84. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back for the final half hour of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This first day of spring, the 21st day of September 2006, and we've got a lot of weather in the news today, so we're going to go ahead and check that right now.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, 68 degrees. Downtown, 70 degrees. Anderson, 69. Also in Clemson, 69. Today, areas of fog this morning, partly cloudy with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 80s. East winds around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain is 20%. Also an update on Hurricane Rita. Right now, it has just been announced that it is a Category 4 hurricane with winds topping at 135 miles per hour.
and barreling down right towards Texas and the Gulf Coast once again. So another big storm already out there in the Gulf of Mexico as a Category 4. Could even become a Category 5. Wouldn't that be something to strike even New Orleans back-to-back with major hurricanes? Hope that's not the case, but God is in control of all things. Remember, the Scriptures teach us that the Lord brings calamity. I'm going to read that passage. In fact, I'm going to flip over to it. If you don't, if you have it your Bible handy, if you're not driving along there, Psalm or Isaiah 45 verse 7 says, "I form the light," God speaking obviously, "and create darkness. I make peace and create calamity." The King James says he creates evil. "I, the Lord, do all these things. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create calamity. I, the Lord, do all these things. Rain down, you heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth salvation, and let their righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it." Well, that's the wonderful thing about our God. Even though calamities come and natural disasters, He springs up salvation and righteousness from the earth that we might be saved, which is a wonderful thing. But in the wake of all of these things that come to pass, we realize that the goodness of God is at work even in the midst of the storm. And if these storms do come to and hit the United States coast again, we have to recognize who is in charge, who is in control, and who is doing his deeds here in the world for righteousness' sake and for the blessings and benefit of His church. So at any rate, so much for Rita for the moment. Interesting that it's increased from a Category 3 to a Category 4 just the last hour since Christian Worldview started. Here's a story or something about New Orleans, as a matter of fact, sent in by the research staff just the other day. What's really behind the chaos in New Orleans? Back in the 1970s, my wife's baby daughter and I lived in Godna, Queensland, a suburb of Brisbane. Let me find out who wrote this thing. I'm going to have to scold the research staff. They sent me an article without telling me who wrote it or where it was from. All right, well, we'll scold them later. We'll still read the story anyway, because we trust the research staff has given us a good article. We just like to know where it came from. Apparently, from someone in Australia. We were young and inexperienced, and like most couples of our age, lived pretty much hand to mouth. It was a struggle to make ends meet. Any savings we had went as a down payment on the home we were buying. Once a week, my wife went shopping and bought the food and supplies we would need for the following week. Like the southeastern United States, the area we lived was subtropical and prone to cyclones, the same as hurricanes. One day a cyclone approached our area. It wasn't as big as wasn't a big one as cyclones go, so we weren't too concerned. We figured 6 to 12 hours of high winds and all would be back to normal. Except things didn't go exactly according to plans. The cyclone moved over atop of us and hit us against another pressure front and stopped dead. And there it sat for 2 days. Not too much wind, but oh, did it rain. An inch an hour for 48 hours. That's right. We got nearly 4 feet of rain. Now Brisbane is built on the Brisbane River, not an impressive river as rivers go, only a few feet deep and 100 feet wide in western suburbs where we lived. At least during normal times, our 4 feet of water over several hundred square miles is one heck of a lot of water. Trust me, on that one, I've seen it. And all that water, all of that water had to get to sea via the Brisbane River. During the night, our little Brisbane River rose and rose. The police were magnificent. They woke people up and evacuated thousands of homes during that long night. Only 2 people drowned in our area, residents of a mobile home park whose trailer was swept away. The police commandeered trucks and backed them up to the local grocery store and loaded all the food and necessities, drove them to high ground and parked them. By mid-morning, the river was 60 feet deep and 3 miles wide. We lived on a hill, so we weren't submerged. When you walked over the crest of a hill and looked down in the valley, there was once a highway, a railroad line, shopping centers, and thousands of homes. You were stunned into silence. All you could see was water everywhere. No electric poles, no rooftops, nothing. Everything was underwater. We took stock of our situation. It wasn't good. The flood came on our weekly shopping day, so the house contained very little food. We had some candles and a flashlight, nothing else. There was no electricity or water. Fortunately, it was warm weather. We were in stunned disbelief. So were our neighbors. However, we decided we had better quickly organize ourselves. We knew we were going to be isolated without water or power for some time. We started collecting all the rainwater we could. Without it, we were messed up. we dismantled and reassembled a non-mortared barbecue under our carport. We started collecting all the firewood we could find. We assessed the flood situation, the food situation. Some people had full freezers. We separated what we could eat over the next several days and dug pits and buried the rest. Everyone shared what they had without a single word that what came from whom. Needless to say, we survived and in good shape. The RAAF flew some food and supplies in, especially fresh bread, and that local prison was baking, and fresh unpasteurized milk from local farmers by helicopter. In fact, I look back on those days with some fondness. Our carport became the hub of the neighborhood. At night, we would just sit around the fire and talk. The thousands of people who were displaced didn't go to refugee camps. They went into the homes of those not flooded, and sometimes of friends or relatives or strangers. Nobody forced you to take in another family. Everyone just did it. Hundreds of millions of dollars was raised throughout Australia. The relief agencies didn't screw around with the money either. As soon as the water receded in a week's time, they set up centers in every hamlet. Anyone who was submerged was given an initial $4,000 in cash to tide them through. Where'd that come from? Much more came later. Was there some abuse? A few instances, but not many, and there was a follow-up to deal with all that. Was there any looting? Virtually none. What did all this have to do with New Orleans? Plenty. Why didn't the people in the Superdome make any effort to organize themselves? Why didn't a group of men patrol the streets and restrooms to prevent rapes? We have gone a long way in the past 40 years to creating a dysfunctional society where self-reliance, pride in oneself, and sense of right and wrong are no longer esteemed or valued. We have allowed governmental media to say that to people that you are not at fault for what you do. You're victims, little children who can't look after yourselves. We have told our minorities that everything that goes wrong is a result of racism, that you cannot succeed in racist societies. We have told the dysfunctional that we look after you no matter how egregiously you act. We have excused crime, saying that poverty creates crime, when all instinctively know that it is a crime that creates poverty. We have told young women that it's okay to have babies without fathers. There is no stigma attached. In fact, if you have a baby, we'll shower you with money and benefits so you can move out of your parents' house and have even more babies, even if this guarantees your babies will be raised in poverty. We have told young men that it is okay to father as many children as you can. The government will assume the father's traditional role and look after the mother and babies. And most importantly, we have called morals old-fashioned and judgmental. What right does society have to say anything, something is right or wrong? And what have we gotten for this? Not to mention the $1 trillion we have spent on the poor. Citizens who, at the first sign of trouble, stand around bewildered. You see it on the news, faces screaming, help me, tell me what to do. God help us, we are reaping what we sowed. And in general, I think that's a great article. A few foibles here and there, as you heard me hiccup when I read it on the air. But this is an interesting compare and contrast, isn't it, between and seeing what welfareism has done to destroy the American psyche and the way things have been going. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're well over for a break here, but we're going to combine both breaks and play for you the Bill of Rights now, so stay tuned as you listen to that great theme once again, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
If the state sets itself up as the supreme arbiter of human affairs, it must domesticate the individual, lest any lingering remnants of self-reliance weaken the state's authority. The state must resist the individual's effort to follow the dictates of his conscience, lest they conflict with the decrees of Caesar. In the interest of its own safety, the state must eventually deny that the individual is a person, for the individual can be a person only when he puts his obligation to God ahead of his obligation to Caesar. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in the Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 145.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today. This is the final segment of the show for September 21st, 2005. We always like to read, almost always at any rate, Chuck Baldwin. We had him on the show a few months ago. Did a great job there, or interesting at any rate. He had opened our eyes to a number of issues of the Constitution Party and so forth, and their particular views here and there. Here, Chuck Baldwin writes in his column for September the 20th that Judge Roberts is no Rehnquist, by Chuck Baldwin. Chuck Baldwin, of course, a pastor in Florida and former vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. Conservatives everywhere, he says, including leaders of the religious right, are fawning over President Bush's nominee to replace Chief Justice William Rehnquist, Judge John Roberts. They are praising Roberts as a conservative, a strict constructionist, and even calling him pro-life. However, Roberts' personal statements and judicial track record reveal something entirely different. First, unlike Justice Rehnquist, Roberts has said or done nothing to indicate that he objects to the Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion on demand. Instead, Judge Roberts pledged to respect an established ruling if confirmed to the Supreme Court, saying judges must recognize that their role is not to solve society's problems, and that source, Newsmax.com. If Roberts can be taken at his words, he considers Roe v. Wade decision settled law and therefore would do nothing to overturn it. By way of comparison, it would be interesting to know if he also would feel that the Dred Scott decision legalizing slavery was settled law and therefore worthy of respect. This conclusion is also shared by conservative pundit Charles Krauthammer in the Buffalo News. Wrote, I predict two things. A, Chief Justice Roberts will vote to uphold Roe v. Wade, and B, is replacing his former boss, Chief Justice Rehnquist, will remove the court, only mildly, but most assuredly, to the left, as measured by the only available yardstick, the percent of concurrences with the opinions of those conservative touchstones, Scalia and Thomas. Wow. So here Chuck Baldwin is telling us, guess what, folks? You're not going to get anything more out of this guy than Rehnquist was, certainly, and most likely you're going to end up with a left turn to the court. He says, I infer this not by just by what Roberts has said in his hearings, that he supports Griswold versus Connecticut, that he respects this precedent, that he finds Roe itself worthy of respect. I infer it from his temperament, career, and life history as an establishment conservative who prizes judicial modesty above all. Which means while he will never repeat what Roe, he will never repeal it and be the cause of the social upheaval that repeal would bring. Krauthammer is not the only conservative to understand that the Roe decision is not threatened by Roberts' appointment. Leading Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said Supreme Court nominee John Roberts cannot be counted on to vote to overturn the Roe versus Wade decision that legalized abortion. This statement was made on Fox News Sunday and reported by Tyler, Texas ABC affiliate KLTV. Therefore, those conservatives who are claiming that President Bush kept his promise to appoint a conservative pro-life nominee to the Supreme Court are either woefully ignorant of the real John Roberts or are willing to support him simply because Bush appointed him. However, this similarity between Roberts and Rehnquist does not end with the abortion issue. While Justice Rehnquist was a consistent foe of pro-homosexual rulings by the court, Roberts' track record on the subject reveals something vastly different. Concerning the pro bono work which Judge Robert did for Lambda Legal Defense, a homosexual activist group, in the run-up of a pro-homosexual decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in the case of Romer versus Evans, Roberts made it clear he found nothing morally objectionable to abetting the sodomite cause. That's a source of Howard Phillips. It's more than interesting that Roberts did not mention his work in the gay rights case in his 67-page response to a Senate Judiciary Committee questionnaire, even though the questionnaire specifically asked for specific instances in which he had performed pro bono work. Furthermore, longtime Roberts friends Edward Lazarus expresses the view that John Roberts would share practically nothing in common with conservative justices Rehnquist, Scalia, or Thomas. Well, Rehnquist should not be in the list with those guys, as we read from the Libertarian Critique, at any rate, and some others recently. But he was better than the others, it's true. Lazarus said, putting aside politics aside, the current court member Roberts most resembles Stephen Breyer. It could be argued that Breyer is more liberal than even David Souter and Anthony Kennedy. The bottom line is that George W. Bush has done what he's been doing over 5 years, pulling the wool over the eyes of conservatives, leading them to believe he shares the values and principles, all the while keep making decisions that prove just the opposite. Should Roberts be confirmed as Supreme Court's next Chief Justice, and I'm sure he will doubtless do exactly what Mr. Lazarus predicted and turn the court further leftward. That means unborn babies will continue to be legally murdered, homosexuality will continue to enjoy most favored lifestyle status, there will be more eminent domain rulings and even more egregious Patriot Act-style rulings. However, it could even get worse. Bush has already thrown out Alberto Gonzalez's name to replace Sandra Day O'Connor. May God help us, because we are certainly getting no help from the Republicans in Washington, D.C., or the leaders from the religious right. Great commentary. Couldn't agree more. And interesting that we can also add to his slate of foibles of John Roberts, his pro-homosexual or his homosexual endearment, I guess you might say, among his hatred for private property, apparent hatred, and his love for the pro-death camp. Well, I'm exaggerating here. I don't know if he loves abortion. He's just not going to stop it. I don't know if he really hates private property. He just believes that it's okay for government to sack it now and then. So I guess that's a more generous interpretation on Roberts. Well, here's finally an article. Unless we get a caller in the last minute here, I'll go ahead and read something from Freedom Daily. This was sent to me by the ChristianLibertarians.org again, and Brian up there at the ChristianLibertarians.org. Hope you can visit that website. This is an article by Sheldon Richman, who, of course, is the editor of The Freeman, Ideas on Liberty. It's been published for many, many years, maybe 6 or 7 decades, actually. The article is entitled Democracy, But Not Necessarily Freedom. He says, democracy is breaking out all over, or that's the impression we get from the daily news. Maybe it's true. Elections have been held in Afghanistan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and the Palestinian territories. There's talk, just talk, of a real presidential election in autocratic Egypt. Who's next? One did not need to sanction the imperial Bush doctrine to take inspiration from two salient features of these developments. First, the people participating in those elections apparently believe they should have some say in who governs them. That is surely preferable to their believing it's none of their business. Second, many of them were willing to risk their lives to have that say. Those of us who never face that sort of physical danger that occurs in the Middle East daily can only watch in admiration. Yet it would be wrong to mistake the sprouting of democratic procedures with liberalism, the philosophy of individual freedom, that is, the classical liberal idea, private property, and the rule of law. They are not the same, and thinking they are has done a great deal of mischief. Many thinkers over the millennium have taken pains to distinguish democracy from freedom. In F.A. Hayek's third volume of Law, Legislation, and Liberty, we find this passage from Aristotle's Politics, where laws are not sovereign, since the many are sovereign, not as individuals but collectively, such a democracy is not a constitution at all. Aristotle recognized that constitutions are in an important sense undemocratic. If by democracy we mean the untrammeled authority of the majority, when the U.S. Constitution enumerates a final set of congressional powers, or the First Amendment states Congress shall make no law, they impose limits on what the people collectively may do. By doing so, they protect the people individually. Power versus freedom. Aristotle thus shows himself to be a modern rather than an ancient. In the early 19th century, the French liberal Benjamin Constant distinguished the two notions of liberty. The ancient notion was collectivist. It consisted in the unrestricted freedom of the polity, the majority, to do what it wished. The individual freedom lay exclusively in his ability to participate in collective decision-making, that is, in voting. In this theory, when the individual was forced to conform to the majority's wishes, even in matters of religion, that was simply the polity exercising its rightful freedom. To defy the majority was to limit the people's freedom. If Aristotle was an ancient modern, the German philosopher Oswald Spengler, like Rousseau, was a modern ancient, as shown in his statement, power belongs to the whole, the individual serves it, the whole is sovereign, everyone is given his place, there are commands to obedience. The modern notion of liberty, Constant went on, consists in individual autonomy, which is actuated only through private property. Voting is simply one, rather minor, aspect of freedom, the arm of the ancients. And we appreciate Sheldon Richman's article here. He concludes simply by saying, what does this say for the spread of democracy in the Middle East and elsewhere? It says that the celebrations are premature. The journey from autocratic despotism to elective despotism is neither far nor rewarding. We can hope that the convention, I should have a say in who governs me, will metamorphose into, I should be free to run my own life, but there is nothing automatic about it. Western liberalism took many centuries to evolve, emerging spontaneously from many diverse sources, religious and secular. It was an unplanned order that could not have been designed or imposed. Neither can it be designed or imposed in regions where today is strange and untrusted. And this is a good way to conclude our show today. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Appreciate Sheldon Richman's article, and as well as all the other good phone calls and articles and so forth that we read today. We look forward to another edition tomorrow of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Hope you join us then. And until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.